This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You and I have unfinished business.
The first rule of Fight Club is you do not talk about Fight Club.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Get away from her, you...
Ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
You want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
At the movies on BFM 89.9.
I'm Uma Pagan, I'm Fakir Pagan, and joining me on the show today, I have very special guests, the directors of Police Evo 2. I've got Joel So and Andre Chu with me. Guys, welcome to the show and congratulations on a great film.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So both Ian Baher and I had a fantastic time in the cinema. I think Ian's description of Die Hard on an Island kind of summed up what the movie was about.
Actually, that was what we had on the whiteboard.
I was just going to ask, was that the plan?
That was the plan. The plan was the formats that we followed. I mean, with Police Evo 1, we went with the Lethal Weapon Bad Boys format.
Correct.
I'm not ashamed to say that for this film, we went with a combination of Die Hard plus Toy Story 2 and a bit of the kind of Nolan... intercutting, basically. That was something we wanted to take on.
And I think we noticed the Toy Story 2 stuff as well. So talk to me about the structure of this film, because it is a departure from the first movie.
Yes.
And the reason I asked that question is because traditionally, when a movie makes as much money as the first one does, what Malaysian studios tend to do is go, hey, make the same thing again.
I think there's two ways to look at it. We really wanted Police Evo as the brand, right, to be treated as a franchise, basically. So if you look at, like, I think Captain America is the best example. The first film is a war film. The third one is a Cold War thriller kind of film. So what we quickly can see from that is that when you take the same characters, but you put them in different genres, hence different situations, it gives opportunity for it to grow as a franchise more so than as a series, basically. Because as a series, if you do the same thing by the second film or the third film, you probably dry up already. So that's the kind of approach that we took with Police Evo 2 in hopes of expanding it into a bigger franchise.
In the time between Police Evo and Police Evo 2, God knows, and I won't name any names, there have been lots of other movies that have come up trying to replicate your success, and they haven't done as well. Were you looking at these movies when you were making Police Evo 2? Were you using them as benchmarks? How did you move forward?
We definitely looked around and we were very aware of the competition in the industry. But I do think that one thing that we learned from the past, right, and not in regards to our films, but in terms of how producers generally think, you know, they will make maybe a comedy rampage film, for instance, right? And the film will hit 8 million. And a lot of producers will go like, whoa, that 8 million is the market that we want. But not a lot of producers will think, what is that film not doing to get more than 8 mil? And I think KL Gangster did that. You know, they went ahead and broke that mold, and that's how they got 11 mil. And so that taught us to think a bit differently. Yes, some will say if it's not broken, don't repair it, don't try and fix it. But we do believe that if we do not evolve past our success, our previous success, then we're not in the place to set standards again. And so I think that gut feeling was what drove us to make Police Evo 2. Yes, we're aware of the competition outside. And we know that they too have contributed to the growth of the industry. But we definitely secretly, I guess, we definitely want to still try to be number one again. Yeah.
Andre, how did you guys work together? How did you guys split up your tasks?
It was quite different and quite easy, because Joel was in the writer's room. He's also the producer. So as a director, he's very in charge of how the whole structure of the story goals and all the actors' performance and all that. So that's really his department. And where I come in is to translate the words into picture with the intention of all the plot lines, the beats, as well as all the nuances in there. So what guides us both working together is the script, because the script is written so well that I know what he wants from the script, and that's where I would do my stuff and we'll work together.
Basically, Andre works very closely with Tech Z, our cinematographer. In getting the look of the film, in getting the angles and all that. He very much controls the set for me, freeing me the time and space to actually work with the actors for their performances. And I work with the acting coach named Ayam Farid. So that's pretty much how we split our work on set. But then after set, we will have our discussions, and then that's kind of how we handled the 85 days of shoot.
85 days?
85 days,
That's a long shoot.
Yeah, it's a long, really long shoot. And we've been really blessed. We started shooting in October, was it? And then we stopped for
you've
a while.
Lost track, lah.
I've lost track.
But we were really lucky because we're shooting in Pekan, Kuantan. And it's monsoon season. And it was raining everywhere else except on our set. So for 85 days, I think there was like 3 days of rain at most.
Yeah, it held us back a couple of days.
Yeah.
But we managed to pick that up eventually. Surprisingly, we got really lucky.
I mean, it was raining like mad in KL. People calling us like, how are you guys shooting? And I was like, I kind of want to make it sound like we were in this, you know, storm. But it was sunny, basically, as you can see in the film. It was just sunny throughout. So we got really lucky there, yeah.
So one of the things that Ian pointed out in our review was that every actor had a different stance and a different way they held their gun. I mean, there was a lot of interesting detail that went into each of these individuals and their characters.
Yeah, so we had a weapons tactical specialist. His name is Kelvin. And when we designed the characters, obviously we wanted to highlight each and their specialty basically. So we trained them, and I think Sam and Zizan actually went for 1 year of gun training, actually.
Wow.
To make sure that their stance is proper. But then Sam felt like he wanted a different stance from Zizan. Zizan's stance is the more common one, I would say, whereas Sam's is a bit different. But he's a sharpshooter, so we felt that we wanted to highlight that difference, basically. But Sam, Zizan, Madan, Amin Shafina, Sweep, and Riz Amin's stance is pretty much the same. That's in terms of handguns. So when it came to the rifles, those UCAP members had different. I think that we trained them for like 6 months, actually.
Yeah.
6 to 8 months or so. Then when it came to the terrorists, the cultists, basically, we wanted them to really look like cultists, you know. So we were saying, like, we don't want them to be too good, but we don't want them to be like Somalian pirates either. So it was an in-between, basically. So yeah, we went into those kind of details in the training.
Wait, I just have to add, because I think a lot of people don't know, this is not normal.
What is not normal?
This doesn't happen in every Malaysian production, this kind of detail. No, right?
I mean, if you look at the pouch just that they wear and the stuff that's in the pouch, everything is proper, basically. If those were real bullets in those magazines, these guys can go to war.
Because when they were shooting their guns, they weren't actors going pew, pew, pew and shaking the guns.
Yeah.
No, they were real guns. We imported them from Hong Kong. Yeah, blanks from California. Yeah.
So because it's the recoil of the that gives them the,
because there's so
reaction.
Much fake recoil in movies.
Yes. And the only ones that do good fake recoil is John Wick, actually, because they use airsoft guns, but those are illegal in Malaysia, so we have to use real guns. Yeah.
I'm assuming you didn't do a John Wick counting the bullets, lah.
No.
Okay.
We wanted to keep it as realistic as possible. So in the editing phase, right, we wanted to make sure that there were reloads and all that, tactical reloads and all that, just to make it realistic. But I don't think we did a death count, actually. So body count, yeah.
We did roughly, like actors would say, okay, Andre, I'm at 20. Do I reload at this shot? I'm like thinking about the edit. Okay, you reload here. Oh, you don't. Mm-hmm. So it.
But
we
I think
do
we took enough reload
rough,
so that when we edit, we could just... Yes. Not make it too tactical, but have enough so that it's realistic.
And not John Woo too.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, of course.
No John Woo.
No
this
doves,
time.
No flying through the air.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, a little bit of flying through the air. La.
But no two guns handling and all that. Yeah.
Unlimited bullets.
Yeah.
The movie is wall-to-wall action, right? And I think it's important to tell that to people because I think you have a bit of a prologue.
Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as they get to the island, it is essentially nonstop with a little bit of communication back to KL where the base of operations is.
Mm-hmm.
When I think about movies like that in Hollywood, it's quite commonplace. But it is risky in Malaysia to not have a love story. Just the usual tropes that we often see in Malaysian cinema. Did you get much pushback from the studios when you said you wanted to tell this story?
No, Astro. I work for Astro, and they have been really supportive and really open. Police Evo 1 is proof of that. You know, they gave us absolute creative freedom, and with Police Evo 2, likewise, basically. I understand what you're saying. I know that local audience have certain expectations when it comes to story. Police Evo 2 is actually a lot more complicated in its plot and its narrative. I just hope that audiences can see that. I'm not sure if it will just go through their head, you know, because a lot of people say it's very action-packed, when in fact, while it is action-packed, a lot of the dramatic moment is what contributes to the kinetic energy of the film. It's not just guns blazing throughout.
No, it's very character-driven.
It's character-driven, characters making mistakes and filled with guilt and trying to, you know, reconcile and whatnot. But yes, it's not just guns blazing. I wouldn't even say it's like 13 hours where it's guns blazing throughout. There are actually a lot of scenes where the energy, the kinetic energy of the frame or the scene is actually driven by decision-making as opposed to pulling the trigger. So I thought that was something that, you know, would be good to highlight. You know, it's not just guns blazing. There is a fair amount of action, but there is a lot of plot-driven, you know, character choices basically in the film that drives the plot.
I wanted to get you guys to respond to some of the controversy that was going on, right? I mean, obviously, there were some people who had seen the trailer of the movie and then gotten overly worked up about it. In the actual film, we felt the storytelling to be very nuanced. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about, I guess, your process of writing it. Did you expect this sort of reaction? People, essentially, in a nutshell, people were saying, oh, it portrays Muslims as terrorists. And I have to do that voice when I talk about them because that's how I hear them say it. did you expect that kind of lashback? Because
we did expect some kind of lashback. Even in the scriptwriting process, we took a lot of risk in writing this film. I mean, and that was one of the risks that we took. But we were very confident with the writers that we had. The writing team consisted of people like Anwari, who wrote Pascal, Asa, who is this new writer who's actually really good, Alfie Palermo, Salman Aristo, and these people are Muslims. And we trusted that, you know, there's a fine line between showing a cultist, being a cultist, and a cultist who starts to become a joke. And
correct.
We didn't want to go there. Although that would have been the easiest path. You know, you make him look like a joke.
Make him look like a cartoon villain.
Yeah,
right?
You make him worship a skeleton, a kambing of sorts, right? And then everyone would say that's straight up cultist. But then that would make him a joke, you see. So we didn't want to go there. And not going there meant taking some risk, basically.
Correct.
But however, I do believe that, you know, the beauty of democracy is that we can agree to disagree. And so that's a stance that I'm taking. I do hope that they can watch the film first before coming to any sort of conclusion. But I appreciate and I respect their comments and their thoughts.
I was just going to say, watch the movie first. I mean, that is pretty much my response to anyone who has any sort of criticism about any film, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's Police Evo 2 or Bohemian Rhapsody, I'm just like, watch the movie first and then make your comments, not based on a 2.5-minute trailer.
Yes, and I think they were nitpicking on wardrobe, basically, and I thought that was a bit sad that was what was being nitpicked. But I would say, though, that we actually placed a lot of effort. I don't want to sound like a filmmaker trying to explain the film, and this might be spoilers, so I'm just going to, you know, talk bare minimum. But there is a sembahyang scene in the film where it was very dear to us and precious to us, even during the writing process, because we didn't want characters that were praying sort of like mengadu-ngadu to God. You know, we wanted to show the camaraderie, the brotherhood that was true to the religion. And that was a scene that was so precious to us, to a point where even during the music composing stage, right, I spoke to Paul Morrison, our music composer, and I said that we need to get a great sessionist to play the guitar for this scene. And we found a sessionist that was the best in the region, actually, just for that scene. So a lot of effort was placed in making sure that certain scenes were outshine other scenes, basically.
And I think that's something that we pointed out in our review as well, that with your villain, what you did was you painted a character that was complete in his own right. And I think that's very rare in a Malaysian production. Actually, that's very rare in a Hollywood production, where you have a villain who isn't a Miss Moustache twirling, jungle stroking bad guy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I enjoyed that he was always very calm and collected and knew exactly what he wanted. I mean, it was Zizan's character who was, for lack of a better word, losing his shit, right?
Yeah.
And that's very rare. And it's quite pleasant as a viewing experience because it's somewhat different.
Yeah, we wanted two guys with very strong principles. And we've seen in Police Evo 1, Zizan has very strong principles as a cop. So it made sense to get an antagonist, a villain, that believed in his principles even more so than Zizan, so that he could break Zizan, so that we can see that arc of him, you know, not believing in his principles for a while before coming back up again. So that was extremely important. That's why the villain cannot be a joke. If you start making a villain that's laughing, like you said, you know, touching his misai and laughing and all that... I guess some people might appreciate that, but that is not something that we would... I think it would be cringeworthy, and I don't think that's where we wanted to go.
Yeah. When getting these performances out of these characters, what were you directing the actors to do? Where did you tell them to go?
Well, it was always the backstory that they asked for, and that we had a really thorough backstory for all the actors and all the characters. Sorry, the characters. But we wanted to make sure that when we shot the film, it wasn't in your face. That's why we didn't have any sort of like scenes where like, oh, so this is the guy's backstory. You know, we were hoping that through their dialogue and their action that you could already sort of sense that where they're coming from. Basically.
And you did that in Police Evil 1.
Yeah, but Police Evil 1, I think, had a bit more of a...
As in, you set up the bromance already. Mm-hmm. So you didn't have to redo it.
Yes, yes. But it was important to sort of separate them and bring them back again. That was a tough call, to be honest, during the writing stage, because we were like, okay, wait, you know, Empire Strikes Back did that, Toy Story 2 did that, a lot
of films
did
that. Guardians of the Galaxy 2 did that.
Yeah, a lot of films did that, but a lot of films didn't do that as well. And so we were like, macam mana ni? So that's why we ended up with 6 drafts. We actually had a draft where both of them were inside the hostage hall. We had another draft where both of them were outside the hostage hall. And finally, we decided that, no, we had to separate them so that the audiences would miss the comeback, you know? And that was a risk that we took, yeah.
And it works, lah, because that's what you want, right? When the comeback finally happens, you're like, hell yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. That's the moment you're waiting for, man. It was a really fantastic film. And I think we had a really, really good time in the cinema. What was particularly fascinating about this movie was that it comes off the back of a tremendous momentum in Malaysian cinema over the last 3 months, where a whole bunch of movies have been making a lot of money, right?
Yeah, 2018's been crazy.
It has. Yeah. I mean, crazy and not, because the vast majority of films still didn't make any money. But those four movies, Pascal, Hantu Kat Lima, Munafik 2, and Dukun as well, right, were the ones that kind of broke the mold. Dukun, of course, being almost a decade old. But these other three movies made a tremendous amount of money, and there's a bit of momentum. I'm curious, Joel, is this a flash in the pan? I mean, I don't see this as something symbolic. For me, it still feels like an anomaly.
But I think Pascal is an important outlier, because I think it shows that, you know, if a film is done well, you know, audiences will respond well to it. So, and I think Baby Steps, you know, it used to be that we would only have one breakthrough film once every 2 years.
Yeah.
And then once a year. Now we're looking at 4 films that have passed the 20 million mark.
And the previous film hasn't even come close to the figure of what it is.
Yes, you're right.
We're looking in it's like a new market that we're looking at.
Yes, and the great thing about these films making it also is that they're all very different genres. You know, it used to be a time when if you make a gangster film, everyone made a gangster film. If you made a horror film, everyone did that. But now it's completely different. Producers are all taking bolder, you know, decisions, and I'm quite excited for what's to come in the next 2 to 3 years, to be honest. So, again, I know if you feel that it's an anomaly still, but I'm a bit more optimistic. I think Baby Steps, I think we're getting there. Indonesia is showing that trend since the past 2 years, and I hope that will be the same for Malaysia as well.
I think, and I'm not just saying this because you guys are here, I think that Police Evil has potential to be bigger than those other films, if only because I think it has potential to appeal to a wider market. So something like Munafik 2 has a very strong Islamic root, because that's in the story. You know, 70% of the script is scripture. And so it's very rare that an Indian person or a Chinese person or a person who's a non-Muslim might go and watch that movie. Hantu Kat Lima as well, some of the jokes are very inside. And unless you're very aware of Malay culture and Malay humor, you may not get those jokes. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a universality. But even beyond that, I mean, there's lingo, which you might not understand.
True.
Meanwhile, I think there's a universality to your shoot 'em up that does appeal across language and race.
And that's what we're hoping. That's the only reason why I compromised and said, oh, well, 3-tier subtitles, let it be, because it was like right smack across the frame, right? It was heartbreaking to see. But at the same time, I do understand the necessity for it. And I think that's what we are targeting, actually. So if you see the promotion of the film,
I think eventually that's where we as Malaysian filmmakers want to do. We want to make a Malaysian film.
True.
Despite the colours, you know?
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what languages it is, you want to appeal to the domestic market the audiences here, and that's how. If you look at South Korea, that's how they make it, single language. Everybody understands the language. They boom and all that. That's what our challenge, multi-language. But is that really a challenge?
Mm-hmm. If that's something that we can tackle, and if Malaysians start watching Malaysian films, yeah, I think we can get closer towards having that insane box offices that would allow our film to then travel. That's definitely the aspiration that the both of us share, to try to make films like that so that one day, hopefully, we can bring our films to the international stage.
The both of you have observed Malaysian cinema as well as participated in it, and I'm curious as to what you guys think we need next. What were some of your frustrations, and what were you thinking, if we only had this, maybe more writers, more technical guys, more weapons experts? I mean, what do we need next? What's lacking?
When we were making Police Evo 2, it was always... the team was giving their best, but many times we find ourselves hitting a wall, basically, because a lot of what we were attempting, we didn't have the experience for it. So when we were talking about getting real guns, for instance, I don't think any film has had as many guns as we have, you know. So even little details like how would the blanks look like over on the camera, what kind of, how many percentage of gunpowder should there be in a blank? Little questions like that would just literally jam the whole production, you know. We built the set, and the whole kampung was a big set. The whole siege area was a set as well. And building a set that big, you know, we had a lot of questions as well. So basically at every point in every department, we came to a point where we were always fighting with the fact that being the best was not good enough. How do we actually break through that? So if you ask us, what do we need? Truthfully, we need opportunities. And if the audiences will support our film and give us those opportunities, the team that we have built from Police Evo 1 now into Police Evo 2 can be honed further. And as we are honed, I believe that's how we can make even better films.
Keep making movies like this, man, and people will support you, I'm sure. Yeah.
I hope, yeah.
Thank you.
What's next?
I don't know.
I know. Okay, fine. The movie's just out, right?
Yeah.
But still, I mean, you must have ideas in your brain. I mean, you've done Die Hard, you've done Bad Boys and Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
You know, you got to wrap up the trilogy somehow.
I have to be honest, I have no idea. I've been on this for 3 years since the script writing stage, and when I went to the gala and they're asking what's next, I just looked at them and said, what's next? A week of sleep, maybe. I have no idea. So yeah. I guess ask us that maybe in a couple of months.
It's
a
tricky
have an idea.
One because when I came in, I wasn't in the writing process. I don't know what was in his head. But when I read this script, it felt to me this is a natural sequel. Although people would think that you have the right formula, you should continue the right formula. But if it's a story about police and what they do, it's only natural that it goes into a bigger stake.
Well, that's the best sequels, right? Escalation.
Yes.
Yeah.
And this is quite a stake.
Yeah.
So how far can you go with the third one?
Yeah.
You have to, though. I mean, like, you know, that's why, you know, Alien, Aliens, and then Alien 3 made that mistake of de-escalation, especially after Aliens, and everyone was like, what's next?
Our editor, Nazim Shah, seems to think that the best step for Police Evo 3 is to make it a zombie film. So, I no comments on that.
I'm telling you, Police Evo Hantu, right? That's next.
Zombie Evo.
You want to break that 40 million mark? That's it, man. Zombie Evo. Joel, Andre, thank you so much for talking to me today. It's been a pleasure having you on.
Thank you so much.
Hey, are you guys on Twitter?
I think so, I am.
Yeah. You think so?
Yeah, I'm on
You're
Instagram,
not on Twitter?
Yeah.
Okay. You know what? You can tweet me. I'm on @UmaPagan with your thoughts about Police Evo 2, and I will pass the message on to these fine gentlemen.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to At The Movies. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.